ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 यततो
यततो
यपि
यपि
कौन्तेय पुरुषस्य
पुरुषस्य
विपश्चिता
विपश्चिता
इन्द्रियाणि
इन्द्रियाणि
नमाथीनि
नमाथीनि
हरन्ति
हरन्ति
प्रसभं मनः
प्रसभं मनः
यततो यपि कौन्तेय
यततो यपि कौन्तेय
पुरुषस्य विपश्चितः
पुरुषस्य विपश्चितः
इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि
इन्द्रियाणि प्रमाथीनि
हरन्ति प्रसभं मनः
हरन्ति प्रसभं मनः
यततः
यततः
while endeavoring
while endeavoring
he
certainly
Api,
api,
in spite of,
in spite of,
Kaunteya,
Kaunteya,
who son of Kunti,
O son of Kunti,
Purushasya,
Purushasya,
of the man, Vipaschitaha,
Vipaschitaha,
full of discriminating knowledge,
full of discriminating knowledge,
Indriyani,
Indriyani,
the senses,
the senses,
Ramatini,
Ramatini,
stimulated,
stimulated.
Haranti,
Haranti
throws forcefully.
Throws forcefully.
Prasabham,
Prasabham
by force.
By force.
Manaha,
Manaha
the mind.
The mind.
Translation: the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of a man of discrimination, who is endeavoring to control them. Purport. There are many learned sages, philosophers, and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses, but in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. Even Vishvamitra, a great sage and perfect yogi, was misled by Menaka into sex enjoyment. Although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance and yoga practice, and of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind and the senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot cease such material engagements. A practical example is given by Sri Yamuna Acharya, a great saint and devotee who says, "Since my mind has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and I have been enjoying an ever new transcendental mellow. Whenever I think of sex life with a woman, my face at once turns from it and I spit at the thought." Krishna consciousness is such a transcendentally nice thing that automatically material enjoyment becomes distasteful. It is as if a hungry man had satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious eatables. Maharaj Ambarish also conquered a great yogi, Durvasa, simply because his mind was engaged in Krishna consciousness. So then Krishna here has been explaining that how to engage oneself. One is not attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas, because this attraction then will distract one from Krishna consciousness. It will take one away from the actual purpose of life. So then we have the person who is endeavoring, who is not attracted by these things. Then the next difficulty is jnana. By being absorbed in the aspects of jnana, then one may be able to control the senses to some degree. It can bring him to the liberated stage. But until one comes to that stage, then there's a possibility that the senses will carry the mind of such a person away. This is an important aspect. So Prabhupada has pointed out, it's only the devotee, when the mind is fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord, which will be explained in the next verse, is that then the devotee, he can be completely in control of the senses because he has something else that he is dealing with. While the sages, philosophers, transcendentalists, then they have a very great determination, great self-control, they have their austere practices, they separate themselves from the senses, so they will get good results. But ultimately, one can only free oneself from attraction to the senses if one takes up Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, then one cannot. The difficulty comes is that the mind has to do something. Mind will accept and reject. And in this process of accepting and rejecting, it's accepting what will give some taste and rejecting what will not give taste. So depending upon one's conditioning, certain things you find give taste, certain things don't. So as one becomes purified, then things that are pure give taste, things that are impure do not give taste. And then it comes to the point of, then things in the mode of goodness give taste, things in the mode of passion, ignorance don't give taste. And then you get to the point of, within that goodness, then things that are disconnected from material enjoyment, they give taste. This is also in the mode of goodness. There is also the proper interaction with the senses on a very subtle platform. We see the many of the great personalities, and they are, in a very fine way, they are engaged with the senses. The one comes to the point, the jnani, then he's not interested in the senses. But they are the neutral point because they have not gained a taste for Krishna consciousness. So though the mind will reject sense gratification, and the processes that they were following, their austerity, their penance, their yoga practice, it will give a taste. Mode of goodness will give a flavor, it gives a taste. So as long as that is present, then it goes peacefully, goes nicely. But unfortunately, the mode of goodness in this, in the material world, is not pure. So at any time, some tinge of passion or ignorance may come up. And when it does, because their focus is so great that when they focus on these things, then it just carries their mind away. That's why it says here, man, you know, full, vipasthita, full of discriminating knowledge. He knows how the modes of nature work. He knows the separation between the mind and the body. He knows all these things. But the difficulty comes is he becomes distracted. Not because it's so much of an interest in it, but that the focus is so much. And then by concentrating, by contemplating, Krishna later will say, by contemplating these, that seat's booked. Yeah, he has booked that seat since the last 5 years.
Not my monopoly or lease property.
No, but Krishna knows. You have not booked, but because of your devotion, then Krishna has booked it for you. If you had come 2 seconds later, he would have been sitting there. Krishna arranged that you came just then.
Oh, I was not going to see my body, but she was fixed.
Yeah. Here.
No.
So one may ask, this common question comes up, how can an advanced person, how can their mind be diverted into these things? They're advanced, they don't get diverted. Their diversion is different from others getting diverted. See, is that when someone has so many things that the mind is interested in, then nothing happens. Like if, you know, a child comes across something to eat, and there is one thing to eat, immediately they go for that and they eat it. But if they come into the room, and then there's, you know, 50 different kinds of cookies, they don't know which to eat, which one to eat. Well, I eat this one or that one, or they'll take a little bit of this, they want to eat all of them, so you can't eat one of each, you'll get full. So then they take a little this, little that, so they can never really enjoy themselves, they never really get involved. But for the, as one purifies oneself, one starts to kick out so many desires, so basically there's very few left, or nothing left, really, that one is conscious of. But unconsciously, until one comes to pure Krishna consciousness, something is always there. So then, if their mind gets focused into that, then it's focused on one thing. And not only that, their focus on something else is so strong that when it becomes diverted, as Prabhupada says here, diverted, if something comes along, it means, you say, Durvasa was peacefully sitting and doing his meditation, and then Manaka came along. So he wasn't planning this. And then he's focusing on what he's doing, and then when she comes and dances in front of him and says, you know, open your eyes and see your slave, then he opens. What is it? Who's this? And then he focuses. And then it becomes so intense, then we see that what is mentioned in the future, when one contemplates the objects of the senses, then one gets attached. So otherwise, normally, they wouldn't contemplate. They would be going along, they would see some sense guide. They would not contemplate it. They would just know, oh, not this, and move on. But then the problem is then with these things, the mind focuses on it. By some arrangement, the modes of nature are there, as we mentioned. It's the duty of the material world to create all this problem. So then the focus is more, because the focus is more, determination is more, therefore they go too far down the path before they realize what's happened. And then already attachment and all these things then happen. So that's how we see that in so many cases that you have very advanced personalities, great yogis and philosophers, transcendentalists, and they do fall down. It's because of this principle. So it's different than the neophyte's position. The neophyte is different because they haven't detached themselves from these things. They haven't made a determination to get detached. So it doesn't take much to agitate. Or basically already one is agitated. But these people are not agitated. So when something's very peaceful and you add into it, it's very prominent. Right? If you're eating, like let's say, if you're eating a meal that's, you know, very spicy and all that, you eat another preparation that's spicy, you don't notice it. But if you're eating something very plain and simple and you eat something spicy, it stands out very strong. So this is what happens. So we see is that the cure for this, Prabhupada is giving, is that without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot see such material engagements. And he gives the example of Yamuna Acharya. So Yamuna Acharya, then he was a great, very serious student. He was a really strict, serious brahmachari. And you know his story? So he was living in the ashram of his guru. And then, was it Yamuna? Yeah, I'm just thinking, because there's another similar story with Astavakra. Like that. They're very, very similar how it starts. So, whatever. In any case, there was this king, and he had a prime minister. Not a prime minister. He had the guru, the Rajguru. And he was a great pundit, and he was very much absorbed in challenging and defeating others. It is said that Brahmins who are very much into logistical arguments, or who are like the priests and ministers for kings, are also born from the mode of passion. They are not born from the mode of goodness like the general Brahmins, or especially the yogic Brahmins, or the great sages. They're born from higher modes. So they're born from the mode of passion, but there will be more goodness than what the kings are born in. So you see is they fight, but they don't fight with weapons, they fight with words. That is the symptom. So this priest was such a Brahmin. And so then he was challenging everyone. So then Yamunacharya, he was very young, I think he was maybe 12 at the time. So his guru, I think, was defeated by this person. And he was not appreciative of this whole thing. So then he sent a challenge. And the challenge was accepted, and then they said he should come. And he said, well, if it's been accepted, then it means you want me to come. So then where is the royal, you know, you have to send the paraphernalia and the entourage to take me there. Where's the palanquin? Where are the soldiers? Where is what's going on here? You know, you're a great king and you can't even, I'm supposed to walk. You know, so immediately then all these things. So they sent for him so many facilities and palanquin, and they usher him in. So just with that, the husband, the king, was, you know, very much impressed with the abilities of the priest. And, you know, and then the queen is there. But then when she heard of this challenge and how it was done, she was telling the king, says, "Your priest is defeated." Like that. And he said, no, what is it? Some challenge, so many challenges come. Her point was, just see how this challenge has come. So then he came. And then he came in. And he was greeted. He sat down. And he was a young kid. So immediately the priest is thinking, I'm not going to fight with a 12-year-old kid. You know, so then he makes a point is that, you know, amongst Brahmins, age doesn't matter. Age is important for amongst the common people. Someone who's older by age is naturally respected. That's a general principle. Amongst all people, who's older is respected. And who's younger is junior. But amongst Brahmins, who has knowledge. So age is not the thing. So, you know, this point was made, and then the priest said, "Okay, since you are so confident, I will give, since you are the younger, you are the junior, I'll let you ask the questions first. Because whoever asks the questions is at an advantage. Because if the other person can't answer, it's over." So he said, "Okay, you ask the questions." So then he said, "Okay." He says, "I have three questions, if you can answer." He said, first question, he's talking to the priest. He tells the priest, "You prove by Shastric injunctions, you know, that your mother is barren." That's the first question. Right? Second question is, prove that the king is sinful. And third, by the Shastric, you know, references, prove that the queen is unchaste. So as soon as he said this, then the queen stood up and she shouted, "Alabanduru," which means he is victorious. Like that. So then the king, sit down. Like that, you know? Like that. Says, wait, you know? Let the priest answer the questions, you know? Like that. So, you know, she was saying, "No, priest is finished." And then the priest sat and he thought, "What? He's there. He exists. How can he prove that his mother didn't have any children?" You know, and then how is he going to say the king is sinful? And worst of all, how is he going to prove that the queen is you know, not chaste? So he's sitting there, and he says, "I can't answer this." So again, the queen stood up and said, "He's victorious." And then the priest said, "Wait. Now he's asked this. What if these are trick questions? You know, we can't go just on trick questions. Let him answer them. And if he answers them, and we're satisfied, then we'll accept defeat." So then they turned to Yamunacharya, and then he said the first. Says, "According to scripture, that if a mother has only one child, she's considered barren. Because if that child dies, she has no children. So when she has two children, then it's considered, then she has children." Like that. Then the second point was, the king is sinful because he takes tax from the people. And with that tax, he takes on 1/6 of their karma. So even though the king is doing all pious activities, he has 1/6 of the karma, bad karma, of his kingdom. Therefore, he's sinful. And he said, third, is that before marriage, when the girl is unmarried, then her various demigods live in her body to protect her purity. So then Gandharva is there, the moon is there, Agni is there, these different demigods. Then at the marriage ceremony, then the husband goes with the wife to the fire and says a mantra saying that Soma, the moon god, has given you to Gandharva, Gandharva to Agni, and Agni is now giving you to me. So it says already she's been associating with three men before she's you know, met her husband. So in this way, so then he became victorious. So from that, he got half the kingdom. Half the kingdom then was awarded to him. So then he became a great king, very powerful. You know, completely got lost in you know, kingly activities and enjoyments. And this went on for a long time, till he was, you know, had, you know, gotten much older. And then his guru then was, you know, worried about, he figured now is time we should get him back. This is not, he has been too long, you know, away from the ashram. So then one of the disciples, the eldest of the disciples, senior-most, and he was deputed, you have to go and get Alabandaru back from the kingdom. So then he went, and he went there, and he was trying to think how to get in. If I just walk in and tell him, then he's now a king, he's not going to listen to all this. So any nice things, some discussions, so they thought what to do. Then he was thinking, then he remembered there was this one spinach that he used to very much like when he was in the ashram. It's something that you only get out in the forest, so the city people don't see this. It's a rare spinach that you have to pick from the forest. So he went out and picked this spinach, and he came to the back door where the cook was and said, cook this for the king, and he will give you lots of, you know, blessings, like that. So then the cook cooked it. It was sent up to the king, and the king very much appreciated. And so then this devotee, he would bring every day, he would bring this spinach. And this went on for 3 months. Every day he'd bring the spinach, and they'd cook this spinach, and the king would eat it with great happiness, because it would remind him of, you know, his previous thing. Then one day, the Brahmin didn't show up. He didn't bring the spinach, or the cook couldn't cook it. And the meal went to the king, and Yamunacharya asked, where's that spinach? And he says, we couldn't cook today, we didn't have the spinach. So what do you mean? Every day you have the spinach, why today you're not having it? He says, well, we don't collect it. There's this one Brahmin who just came from we don't know where, you know, and he described who it was. And he brings the spinach. So then Yamunacharya Muni says, you know, call this person when he comes. So the next day he came, right, bringing the spinach. And then immediately was called to Yamunacharya. Then he met him, he spoke to him. And that way then he got him back out of the kingdom, back to his ashram, back to the ashram. Then, taking up devotional service, you know, with determination, then Yamunacharya sang this verse. Then he became, you know, who we know as the great Acharya of Vaishnava. He was the main link in the Sampradaya, Ramanuja Sampradaya. His disciple was Ramanujacharya. So it's on his order that Ramanuja wrote a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So we see is that taste for Krishna consciousness, that's essential. When that's there, then we see all these other aspects, then they happen. Otherwise, it is important. It is important that one takes up these trying to disconnect the senses from the sense objects. But the difficulty comes is that if one doesn't have a taste for Krishna consciousness, then there's difficulty. So that's why both trying to become detaching oneself from the material energy by the process of sadhana bhakti, by knowledge, and by the practice of Krishna consciousness, so that jnana and vairag comes. At the same time, we have to practice those things that give us a taste for Krishna consciousness. Hearing and chanting about Krishna, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, you know, hearing the Bhagavatam, living in the Dham. These things give us a taste or an attraction to Krishna. So these must be performed as what is pulling us to Krishna. And these others controlling the senses and all that, then that pushes us. It pushes us out of the material world. So you have to have both. Both have to be done. Like, otherwise, on one's own, just sadhana will not get one actually out of the material world. Theoretically, yes, but practically, no. Like that, it won't. Because the soul has to have tastes. Like that. So Brahmananda will not give a taste. Like that. The happiness of Brahmananda is a momentary thing. So when you're on the eternal platform, then a moment in eternity is a long time. So it seems like a long time. So we can say, yes, you'll go eternally to the Brahman. But it's only a moment. in the person's consciousness, there's a moment, you're freed from the material world, you're happy, you're freed from the material world, I am Brahman, and you sit there very comfortably for a few moments, and then you get bored of that. Okay, now been there, done that, now what? Then we think of activity. And the only activity we know is the activity of the material world. And so again, we come back in. So that's the problem. So it can't get us out of here. While devotional service can. Therefore, it says that the next verse then takes this a step further, that controlling the senses and being Krishna conscious, that's the key. Any questions on this comment? No? Yes?
Yeah. And there was no chance of him being at all attracted by material energy.
Means we see Sukadeva Goswami. Means the question is we see Sukadeva Goswami who's transcendentally situated. Then he took up devotional service, and Prabhupada mentions that he could not be interested in material life. But we only hear of two examples. That's him and the four Kumaras. So in all of the Vedic literatures, you never hear of anybody else being on the Brahman platform. Like that. That's an interesting point. It's talked about, so many are endeavoring for it, but as far as those who are on it, there are only those two. Now if we look at it, Sukadev Goswami is an incarnation of Radharani's parent. And the four Kumaras are one of the incarnations of Godhead. Right? So therefore, they're kind of in their own category. So this impersonal realization as a reality is a theory. But it's necessary, because there are those people that get fed up with the material world. So they have to be given some way to be kept on the path, the progressive path. Because karma has kept them on the progressive path. So they've given up sinful activities, taken up pious activities. Then in this way they progress, they get situated in goodness. Now, when they see that there's no happiness from that, after millions and millions of lifetimes of nice karma. Going to the heavenly planets, coming back here, going to the heavenly planets, coming back here. And then they get tired of it. Then they take up jnana, which then at least puts them on the platform, they understand that the soul takes them in that way a step further. But the whole process is, all these processes, they won't get you perfection. They won't get you back to Godhead. But they will keep you in a pious position so that you may come across people who are. Means the karmi, he always has to feed Brahmins, associate with Brahmins, do yajnas that are done by Brahmins. So if he's a little sincere, then one of those Brahmins will be a Vaishnava. And he will train him in Krishna consciousness. He'll show him that, like Prachina Bharisha. He was just going, doing unlimited yajnas. And he never knew that there was something beyond, because his Brahmins didn't know. And then Narad Muni told him there was something beyond. So then he went beyond. He gave it all up and went to the forest. Not only that, then his sons also. So then, or we see the jnanis, they're discussing, and getting nowhere. They keep themselves basically out of gross maya, though, the subtle maya, that they are the controller, they are God, is there. And then they may be fortunate, like Prakashananda Saraswati and Lord Chaitanya, or Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya, that they come in contact with someone who is a devotee who will explain things properly. Then they will take up the process. So that's there. So they were showing that. That's one. But from the other point is, we see Sukadeva Goswami's in the womb. So there's not a whole lot of maya going on in there. There's a few bugs in there, worms in there for company, like that. You don't have to worry about food. It's being, how do you say, it's being delivered, right? So, you don't have to worry about food. Sleep is no problem. You got a place to stay, so you don't have to worry. So there's nothing to distract, only the sounds outside. And then he's living in his own house, so all he hears is Krishna consciousness, his father's Vyasadeva. So there's nothing to distract. Therefore, then, no problem.
Srila Prabhupada was saying that never in history have you ever seen a person who became a devotee ever go back.
Yeah.
Whereas it is, people become impersonalists, become devotees, but never the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. You never see devotees because there's a taste. See, the impersonal path, there's the taste is that there's no disturbance. But we can see from practical experience how long does that last. We're sitting outside, it's a hot day, we come inside, it's cool, there's a fan or an AC. So while we're in the process of cooling down, we enjoy the difference in temperature. But as soon as we are cool and we've adjusted, it's perfectly normal. There's no more enjoyment. The person who lives in the AC house does not enjoy. When he comes from outside, then he goes, ah, this is nice. Or when he walks out into the heat, then he goes, oh, this is not nice. And he wants to get back into the AC. But while they're living in the house, it's just normal. There is no enjoyment. Therefore, they have to have something else. Otherwise, they could sit there all day. You wouldn't need a television. You wouldn't need so many things. They just sit there all day. Ah, isn't this nice and cool and pleasant? No. It doesn't happen. So the same way is when we give up, get out of the material world because it's a problem, it will be the same thing when we'll get to the Brahman and when we'll experience that happiness for a while, and then it's just the same old Brahman, right? You know, it's just, there's nothing new, nothing special. So then, because the soul is not just sat, so this is their mistake. They're saying we're soul, so we're sat, eternal. But we're chit and ananda. So this is the problem, is that ananda means happiness, and that happiness is based on relationships, and that's going to be operated when there's chit. So then, how that will work? So you can't. There's nothing to do in the Brahman. There's no body. You know, there's nothing to interact with. No one to interact with. So therefore, they only know the material world. So they come back. They can't go beyond. So, but the devotee then knows Krishna. He knows the highest happiness. So it's actual happiness. The other is not. It's just removal of the pain of the material world. So it's not actually happiness. So it's not a positive happiness. So once one's tasted real happiness, that's why we see Prabhupada will talk about liberation or happiness, or that they'll say real happiness, real liberation, or he'll say Krishna consciousness, and they'll say fully Krishna conscious, right? Because Krishna conscious means anybody who understands Krishna's God is Krishna conscious, but we tend to forget. So someone who's fully Krishna conscious always remembers. So at that point, then there's nothing in between to distract the mind. Because if Krishna's there, nothing less than Krishna will give any happiness. So therefore, they are not distracted by the material world. But the others, we may think of Krishna, and then when we're not thinking of Krishna, we may get distracted by the material world. Yeah?
After nishtha, ruchi, taste comes,
yeah.
And we understand nishtha as the beginning platform of prema.
Yeah.
So, if I haven't reached the stage of nishtha and I still have an artis, then where is the taste that I can give up Monday in material taste?
Yeah. This is the element of the basically a buddhi yoga, is the intelligence controls the mind. Therefore, it's called sadhana. Because by the sadhana, then we know what's right and we do it. You know, so there has to be faith. That's the main thing. Is the faith is what faith, the Prabhupada says, faith it uses confidence or something then that you have the idea that something sublime is real.
Conviction.
Yeah, unflinching faith in something sublime. So we know it's there by other things. Maybe we don't know directly. We know that, like Prabhupada says, birth, death, old age, disease. We can look around and it's obvious. This is what's going on. So many things he says, how the material modes work. You know, it's like you have, you know, attraction, then you have attachment, then you have anger, then you have all the... So we can see it working. The more we deal with it, the more we practice it, the more we have faith in it. This is the principle of vichar. Vichar means that one should study the philosophy from different angles. You have one point, and then from different angles you deal with it and try to apply it in your life, try to understand it. Then this gives us more faith. So if this has worked, why that shouldn't work? Right? If person has told us, you do this and it'll be nice, and we've done it and it was nice, then why not if they tell us, if you do this, then you get love for Krishna? You know, or that love for Krishna is the greatest happiness. You know, because as we see that by giving up sinful activities, the mode of goodness has more taste than the mode of passion ignorance. But due to habit, we sometimes fall into those things. But we see when we're in those, that maybe not during, but at least something afterwards, or when we're in there for a while, we start to see that it's not a good taste. It's burning. It's like poison. Though the habit is there, it's hard to give up. But the goodness we see, there's a happiness, a freedom that is there. So then all these things you put together gives you faith. Therefore then we push on, and with the intelligence we overcome. And of course there is some taste. It means all the elements except for basically, you know, your prema, they're all going on all the time. Just which is the major thing that's happening in the consciousness. So when it ruchi means the main thing in the consciousness that's happening is that taste that one has for, you know, the devotional process, for the holy name. Therefore, it's the most prominent thing in your life. But you're fixed, you know, you're attached, of course, but it's not the prominent thing. The next stage, attachment, is then you're so attached to these things that give the taste. Right? Because first comes, there's an attraction, then comes attachment. So that in ruchi, there's that attraction. Nishta, you're fixed. So you'll be fixed. Anartha, you're still working on subtle aspects of anarthas. You know, you're still practicing bhajana kriya, but now it's steady instead of anishta. You're still following, associating with devotees. You're still having faith. The same, so everything in front's there, everything behind is there. But that's the prominent thing. Therefore, it's called ruchi, like that. So in anartha nivritti, then when one becomes determined that I want to get through this, then that is the platform that's called war with Maya. That's that fourth stage where then one pushes. And then, you know, you do your best, she does her best. So the basic thing is Prabhupada then gives the example, is that you go to someone's house, and when you walk into the yard, they have a big monster, ferocious dog. So you're not going to be able to overpower that dog. But because you have a relationship with the owner, when they come out, they'll control the dog. So if we take shelter of Krishna, depend upon Krishna and the devotees, then we can overcome Maya. Because we're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. She's 1/4 the cosmic creation. Right? So the odds aren't so good. You know? But she just only pushes the limit how much you can handle. You know? But by habit, the problem is we're not used to handling it. Right? She doesn't throw us into Maya. It means more than what we can handle. She pushes the limit. You know, just one more, you know, little, you know, nanometer and you're over the line. She'll push it right to there. But by habit, then we may slide. Because it reminds us too much of things, we contemplate too much, then we slide out. But otherwise, we could. She won't do anything that we can't pass the test. You know, but it's just, she's very expert at constantly, every second, bringing up a new test. You know. So, by getting that taste, then we see why it's called like the beginning of that prema, because then it's moving forward is very dynamic. Up to that point, it's been very steady, like that. At nishta, then it starts to balance, it becomes very natural. But when one gets the taste, then one just moves ahead very fast. So that's why it's recommended as quickly as possible one gets to the madhyama platform, one develops that taste, then one is more secure. Then one's position is more secure, like that. Below that, then, is not as secure just because we're not, the faith and determination of Krishna consciousness is not as strong. That's all. Because it's Krishna consciousness that makes the difference. That's the ultimate point. Okay. Anything else?
One has
faith when we develop this when we glue this faith, we have this faith. And then sometimes Krishna gives us mercy. And sometimes the mercy is very difficult to handle because we're not used to it. And how do we deal with the mercy?
The important thing is humility. Is the when if we are humble, then we ourselves do not become overwhelmed by the kinds of mercy, because the mercy may come in the form of you know, fulfillment of material desire. So then we become happy when we get something we wanted, or we become distressed when something we didn't want comes, or we get, you know, some transcendental abilities are there, but we become proud of them. You know, you can see it's not just mundane. Like you hear so many times, devotees relate that, you know, let's say there's a festival, big festival or something, and some devotee that hasn't been around for 20 years or something shows up. And generally you'll see the quality that they were known for before, they still have. They may have done so many things and lost so many, you know, other aspects. Let's say if they were good at kirtan, they can still do wonderful kirtan. If they were a wonderful lecturer, they can still lecture. So you know that those are, Krishna's given those qualities. So that's a form of mercy. He may have taken away so many things, but he also has given. That's the other side of Hari. With 10 hands he can give. So, but if one becomes proud, then that's a problem. Then Krishna will, you know, like Arjuna, proud of his prowess. And then Krishna arranges that a bunch of cowherd men with sticks come and steal away the queens. Right? Okay, it's one thing if, you know, great warriors or big demons came and stole them away. That's one thing. No, just cowherd men with sticks, no weapons. And not only that, they didn't even go up to Arjuna and hit him in it. They just came, grabbed the girls, and ran. And he couldn't pick up his bow, he couldn't string it, he couldn't, you know, he'd get his string, he could hardly pull nothing. So then, it's just understood, you know, that it's time to move on, you know, to different levels of Krishna consciousness. So, humility, respect for others. There's a verse, I think it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I only know part of it. It says, kon kon dvare, kon kon karja. Surup Damodar, I think, is telling, Surup Damodar or Sanatana Goswami is telling Lord Chaitanya, which work you're going to do through whom you only you know. So, what work Krishna wants to do with who, that's up to him. So if we're able to do something and get some good result, we shouldn't think that we are the doer. Krishna is the doer. Like that. His ability is Krishna. If we become proud, then Krishna will find some way to humble us. Like that. But if we're respectful to others and like that, then things will go nicely. Is that okay?
How about the other type of mercy? Positive, nice mercy is coming, so if you remain humble, there's also another mercy which is a little painful.
Uh-huh.
So that painful type of mercy, when you say, oh, you're getting the mercy, you know, when you're suffering something,
yeah, yeah.
You're getting mercy, it's like, I don't need it then.
Thanks, but no thanks. Yeah. No, it's that also we have to be humble. Because generally when something goes wrong, the first reaction is that it's someone else's fault. It's always someone else. I don't deserve this. Right? So, if we are thinking when something good happens to us, I don't deserve it, then generally when something bad happens to us, we will think we do deserve it. But we generally think if something good happens to us, we just think that's normal. Yeah, you know, that's right. You know, wow, it was a great kirtan, yeah, wasn't it? It was really good. Something, you know, like that. Like I remember it was when. So then But then it'll be the opposite. If that is, you know, things are going great, of course, that's the way it's supposed to be. Then generally when things go wrong, it must be someone else's fault, because when things go great, that's the way it's supposed to be. Because, yeah, I'm great. So when things go wrong, it can't be my fault. It must be someone else's fault. Well, if we are thinking that if things go right, it's not my doing, it's Krishna and the mercy of the Vaishnavas like that, then when things go wrong, we understand that is my fault. You know, that is due to my previous... Krishna makes that point again and again. He makes it here in Gita, then in the songs of the Acharyas that make the point. Is one who goes on serving Krishna and being Krishna conscious, at the same time, very humbly suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds. And he's thinking that I deserve these things. And he's thinking that Krishna has, so kindly reduced these things, like that. Then, that's a few verses before. Yeah. In the purport, a few verses before, Prabhupada gets that. Then, that person, that's the ideal. Then one can move on. So this is, because it's the natural thing, we're so conditioned to it. If something goes wrong, then it's someone else's fault. It's our right to get them back, revenge, justice, all these things. We're just, everything does like that. Our dealings, what we see, the animals are like that, Like that, one pig or dog is there, some pile of garbage is there, they poke their nose into it, they're happy, another pig sees that, comes along, pushes their nose there, and it causes a fight. And then they can get back the first pig, because this was my pile of garbage, not your pile, Like this, it goes on. So then the difficulty then comes is that, so we're used to that, so that's our initial reaction. So that has to be seen by intelligence, and by intelligence worked out, because the mind won't do it. The mind will immediately react. So that's why it's gradual. It may take a few times that we start to see, well, maybe, like that, yeah. And Prabhupada, in another place, he mentions that if you check, you study why it's happened, and you can find no reason, then know ultimately that, Krishna is behind everything, and so he knows why it should be there. We've forgotten some desire or some sinful activity from previous lifetime that we wanted. Krishna remembers it's there, though we may have forgotten. So it's...
Maharaj Prabhupada was saying, what fault did he have?
Yeah. It's no fault.
Krishna had his mind.
That's there, is that for the conditioned soul, then we'll look at it that it's our fault. For the liberated person, there is no fault. But Krishna will use them to do wonderful pastimes, because the conditioned soul wouldn't be able to handle that. Right? The normal conditioned soul wouldn't be able to handle like 12 years in the forest, with Duryodhana sitting on the throne, what is their throne, it's like that, or, Pariket Maharaj, or these things. They're very, serious examples. But from that, we take it and apply it in our life, in our small situations. We generally don't end up in the same situation. So for them, it's the Lord's pastime. But for us, it's also the pastime, but it's the pastime of purifying us. Like that.
I was in the, Sunday, Friday morning, I was in the Los Angeles Temple. And there was a class being given about where is it safe on the planet today? Because in the United States, everyone's watching TV, and if you watch the TV screen, it's very dangerous. And the class was, where is it safe? And the Prabhu that was giving the lecture, the class was saying that there's no place that is safe. And I have to argue the point that now that I'm in Vrindavan, this is safe.
Jai Ho, Hariba, Hariba. Yes. Yeah, there's in 75, there was a morning walk in Mayapur. And at that time when Prabhupada was walking, and you know, so many of the GBC and senior devotees were there, Prabhupada brought up the thing about the world war, third world war. And, you know, he basically was telling things about it, where it was, how it would start, this, that, where it would be fought, what would happen. And then they got into so many discussions and very worried about it, and then talking about, you know, building bunkers, and then the top 2 feet of top soil is polluted, and then you have to dig under this and that, and so many things. And after they go into all this thing, the Prabhupada said, you know, what does it matter to you if a bomb drops on your head 20 years early? You know, you chant Hare Krishna, go back to Godhead. Who cares? You know, that was Prabhupada's point. It's like, you know, making all these plans, you know. So no place can be safer, right? You know, if you're in Vrindavan, then you're at the lotus feet of Krishna. So if one leaves here, then one goes back to Godhead. It's definitely...
You get hit by a taxi.
Yes.
I don't know if it was the same incident, but there was a whole file I had when I was not the secretary. And there were questions that
our GBC member was giving to Prabhupada about what to do and what foodstuffs to stop and so on and so on. And Prabhupada finally said, what's the difference? You'll die of old age, you'll die of disease, you'll die of starvation, and you'll die in a war. You should die in Krishna consciousness. That was a very simple.
Yeah. So the point is that there's one thing of making some arrangements. That's the situation. So you make some arrangements. It's another thing if you think those arrangements are going to save you. So that's where we draw the line. You know, if someone says what you should do, okay, we should try to protect, do this and that. But we never think that this is what will save us. You know? Those things, they'll never save us. Like that. Someone just told me 2 days ago of a lady who died of starvation. And she had $1 million in the bank. But she had made a vow that she wouldn't break that last million. She had spent all the other millions, but she had made a vow, I won't spend the last million. So she starved to death, a millionaire. So if you're supposed to eat, you'll eat. If you're not supposed to eat, you won't eat. Even you could buy all, you know, you could buy all the food and you know, in all the big chain stores that they got. Still, you'll die. You know, so
that's why it's nice to have, because in this world, as described by the banyan tree, that nobody knows where it begins and where it ends. So it's nice to have. Between each other.
Yeah, that's important. It's important. Just like on these, what are you? It's important. This on one of those towers crashed in New York. You know, there were so many people who died in that. There was one 70-year-old man who was on the top. He rode the thing all the way down and only got 2 broken legs. So if you're supposed to survive, you'll survive, and if you're not, you won't. So, like you said, therefore we should know that, you know, no place is safe, though the devotees should take shelter of each other. It means we see that in these situations like this, when there is, you know, grave danger like that, suddenly people give up their enmities towards one another, you know, how you say, you know, little things that have bothered each other in the past, they forget about, you know, whether they mattered or didn't matter, and everybody tries to be nice and helpful. So the devotees know that, you know, the material world is temporary. Anything may be lost at any moment. Therefore, they don't get involved in petty dealings, and they deal nicely amongst each other. But anything else? Or?
You were saying earlier that when we get to past the anatta nirvritti stage, then we become figs.
much is still working.
They become fixed. And then we get a taste.
Uh-huh.
So when we're in the anatomy stage, what is the nature of the taste that we get?
Means
is it the taste from, you know, relief from suffering, or is it actually a taste of Krishna consciousness?
Means in the stage of questions on the what is the taste in the Nartana Vritti, means from the very beginning, some taste is there. Like the first day you walk into the temple and eat the halava, some taste is there. Right? And that taste, you know, like, you know, pulls you forward into Krishna consciousness. So always they're there. It's just what is the prominent thing? It's that, you know, that was nice or this was nice, and then you forget about that. Taste means you're always remembering the taste of chanting. It just means that's your meditation. That's why it's called taste. The taste is always there. Otherwise, no one does anything without taste. But it's that there's some taste, but we're being told about a greater taste. So that is what we were talking about before, that needs, requires the intelligence and the faith to then to push on to get to there. Like that. Because otherwise, sometimes the taste is good. Sometimes we have other experiences that, in our mind, overwhelm that taste when they don't have to. Like that. Due to our attachments, then something not nice happens and we become disturbed. We don't have to become disturbed. But because of our conditioning, we may. So it seems that then a bad experience overwhelms the good taste. But actually it doesn't. Because the taste of Krishna consciousness is real, even if it's small. And even if it's only occasional. And any experience in the material world, no matter how bad it is, it's still its shadow, its illusion. Though, because we identify with it, we take it very seriously. Like a nightmare, we take it very seriously. But it's just a dream. So it takes some time for us to, you know, put things into balance and all that. So it's just, that's practice. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Vedha Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityananda Prabhu.
Hari Hari Hari.